You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Detroit Happy Hour Podcast. I'm your host, Sven Gustafson. We are the pod that explores Detroit, one fascinating individual at a time. On today's episode, we are talking data with Garland Gilchrist II. Garland is Director of Innovation and Emerging Technology for the City of Detroit. He's one of the people that is working to open the city up to its data, its rich trove of data. He has an interesting backstory that also includes stops with MoveOn.org and working as the social media manager for Barack Obama's 2008 presidential campaign in the state of Washington. Garland, welcome to the Daily Detroit Happy Hour Podcast.
Thanks.
How are you?
Thanks for having me, Sven. I'm doing great.
Excellent. So this is going to be interesting, I think. I think I'm going to learn something from you. And by the way, I was looking through your resume, and you know, it's got all this amazing stuff. National Campaign Director at MoveOn.org. Of course, your title with the city. You are the founder of something called Detroit Diaspora,
yeah,
which is a network for native Detroiters who live outside of Detroit but want to connect and maybe connect with people who are on the ground here in the city doing important work.
It was basically my subversive effort to convince people who lived other places to move back home, like I was going to do.
Yeah,
that's like the reason I started.
And did you have any success there?
Well, it worked for my family, which was important. That was like literally the purpose. And what's exciting though is I know a number of people who were part of that effort who also did the same thing, and who also there were other efforts that were very similar to it,
yeah,
that kind of sprung up along the same time. And so we all were just trying to get people to come back home because,
yeah,
you know, people learn so much in other places, but they really should apply it the place they care about, the place that made them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'd like to come back to that at some point. So you got a, you know, very intimidating resume. It makes me feel like a slacker, but Director of Innovation and Emerging Technology for the City of Detroit. What does that mean? What do you do?
It's a great question as to what that means. So let me break it down. So basically my job is to look at all the ways that the government delivers service and innovate upon that delivery mechanism. Now, what do I mean by innovate? So the problem is people use the word innovation and never define it. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of overused.
It's incredibly overused.
Yeah.
So the word innovation to me, something is innovative if it is new, different, better, and more valuable to more people. So from my perspective, there's an opportunity to innovate upon every service experience that the government creates. So whether that's the way you get information, mm-hmm, whether it's the way you give the government information, whether it's the way you attend public meetings, whether it's the way you vote, there are opportunities to innovate upon that. That could mean new processes, new technologies, mm-hmm, or new partnerships. So in my role, I've been able to work on a pretty wide gamut of things.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at the entire spread of city
absolutely
services.
So it's everything from like open data and transparency. Like I got to write the policy for open data the first time it's ever happened in the city of Detroit.
Wow.
Do the open data portal at data.detroitmi.gov. But to life and death stuff. So I got a really the most important project I think I've worked on was working with the fire department to help change the way they manage fire hydrants alongside the water department. 2 years ago, like people used to die because firefighters would get to a fire incident and connect to a broken fire hydrant.
Yeah.
And so like houses would collapse, damage would happen, people would get hurt.
Sure.
Well, I was able to work with the water and sewage department and the fire department to actually now use technology, use the cell phones that every firefighter has as standard issue to do a survey of what the status of the fire hydrants were, whether they were broken or whether they were working. For the ones that were broken, they could mark it on their phone and it would shoot a message to the water department. Hey, this hydrant's broken at this location. Go fix that. And once it was fixed, then that fixed hydrant status would then come back to the firefighter's phone. So now when they get someplace, they know to hook up to hydrant A and not hydrant B because it's broken.
Yeah.
This dramatically reduced the amount of damage caused in those types of fires. It reduced the amount of fires that spread to other buildings because of that. And it reduced the number of injuries and deaths. So that's probably the most important thing. So it's like life and death. It's data. It's really everything. It's the beauty of working in municipal government. You get to deal with real stuff. And that's why I'm excited to do it back at home.
Yeah. And so I'm thinking of this app that I downloaded on my phone. I think it's called Fix Detroit.
Improve Detroit. Yes.
Where if you see a broken water main or mm-hmm, a fire hydrant that's, you know, not working or something, you can report it. Was that you?
That was one of my colleagues worked on that. And
because I got some complaints that I got to. No,
we can talk about this. Improve Detroit, right? So we're really, really proud of that because What that is, so for years in Detroit, for a generation in Detroit, if there was a problem with something, it wasn't clear who you called to fix it. It was like you could call this number or you call that number or you could like know a guy who knows a woman who knows a guy. But it was never clear that the right person would receive the message, that they would actually respond to it, that there was a process that
anything
fix
was going to get done.
Exactly. So the thing with Improve Detroit is not just that we created this mobile application website and your ability to call via phone to actually get a problem solved, but we actually guarantee that there is a service level agreement behind that, such that if you say there's a tree that's blocking a sidewalk, like the city, by having that available in Improve Detroit, we're saying that we have a process that'll fix that in, you know, 3 or 4 days or whatever it is, whatever the time frame needs to be, that we'll fix a broken street light in 24 or 48 hours. Mm-hmm. Like we're making a guarantee and a promise that we will deliver service to you on those services that are listed. And what's great is that application is used equitably across the city. Every zip code, every census tract, every council district uses it the same. There's very few technologies that that's true of. So I'm really, we're really proud of that as a city government as a way to deliver service.
Yeah. So this is really interesting. How do you essentially find like things to work on? Where, I mean, is there like a problem bank? Like here are all the things that we know that don't work and that need, we need to figure out a solution.
So unfortunately, yes, there is a problem bank.
is that what it's called? The problem bank?
Right. It's more like a problem sheet, but yeah, we do like collect a lot of potential projects, but they come in from a number of channels. So one is actually just listening to people. So, as part of working for the government, we have to be out and in conversation with people in the community. So whether that's like, community meetings or whether that's just in our own personal lives, interacting with people on our blocks and in our neighborhoods, like sort of people complaining about things. That's one way we get project ideas. And it's important that all of our staff have their ears open at all times.
Yeah.
The second way is people actually do like formally or informally submit stuff like online, like people complaining about Twitter, like somebody actually reads that stuff. Like you can actually tweet me at Detroit Civ Tech and like I will see it and respond to it. The other piece is, you know, we also identify projects by working alongside other departments. So departments like our Department of Public Works or our Buildings and Safety Department, like they know what their own internal pain points are. Because a lot of the work we do is also internal. That fire hydrant thing is actually getting different two departments to work together in a different way. So actually identifying those pain points and those processes that like maybe have too many extra steps or don't make as much sense as they could, that also creates opportunities for us to work on things. So they can come from everywhere. Our goal or our job really is to figure out the best way to prioritize what to work on. The gift and the curse is that there isn't really a wrong thing to work on, but there are like degrees of rightness. Okay. So that's why like the life and death thing around fires kind of took precedence over some other things. But there is a lot of opportunity for us to work and there's a lot of opportunity for us to do some amazing things. And I think it's been well received by the public thus far.
That's great. The city too, I mean, it should be pointed out that Detroit has this, you know, long time reputation of being kind of this information black hole, right? I mean, as a former reporter, I remember, you know, a long time ago calling the city, I mean, nobody was going to cooperate with you. Nobody wanted to give you the time of day or look for the information that you were asking for. It was, you know, it was almost pointless. Mm-hmm. So this is a big change in the way the city does business.
Absolutely. I think, you know, one of the most important things that was clear is that if we wanted to do a reset in how we deliver services, we need to do a reset in the relationship of the city government with the residents of the city.
Yeah.
And you reset relationships by reestablishing trust. One of the ways you can reestablish trust is by saying, okay, I'm going to be transparent. I'm going to be open. I'm going to tell you the truth. Good, bad, or ugly. Mm-hmm. So that was really the underlying principle of the open data, executive order and the open data portal, which is like, look, we are going to tell you what's happening. We're going to make our best effort to give you as much data information about operations, and we're going to work to get more stuff out there as we can make it available as we get the capacity, because we're going to have a conversation about government services and how they're delivered that's based on facts about how they're delivered. And it will hopefully engender enough goodwill to say that we are putting an honest foot forward so we can now begin to rebuild our relationship, rebuild our trust. Mm-hmm. It's great because – so take your former journalism colleagues now. We want to work with them to be able to use that open data portal to answer some of the questions that they may have. And we're really happy to see that some journalists have been doing that and really diving in. It's exciting because that's one of the reasons we created it, as a resource for people to do that type of research. And so mm-hmm. we're – we always want to make it better and easier, and we're open to feedback about it.
So let's talk a little bit more about that data. I mean, aside from the, you know, fixing the issues with fire hydrants, yeah, and improved Detroit and those sorts of things, what kind of data is available right now from the city, and what can, you know, sort of residents, you know, people, not talking about necessarily reporters, but just everyday people who live in or work in the city of Detroit, who maybe aren't big data nerds, what can mm-hmm. they do with this?
You don't have to be a data nerd to be interested in what the data, the story the data tells. So one of the biggest things that people ask city government about, whether that's through the Department of Neighborhoods or like by literally calling the mayor's office or like going to a rec center and asking a staff person a question, is they ask about property. They're like, there's a building on my block that I have some concern or question about. What's happening with that building? Mm-hmm. If there's construction happening, is it permitted? Like, what are they building? If it's dilapidated, like, is this house going to get knocked down because mm-hmm. it's a nuisance to our neighborhood?
Or is it tax delinquent?
Yeah, exactly. So people have a lot of questions about property. So one of the richest sets of data that we have on the portal is information about property. We have information about ownership and like sales history. We have information about permit data, so building permits, trades permits, demolition permits. We have information about demolition and our big demolition program, and about where a property is in the demolition pipeline. We have information about whether there have been blight violations, so these code enforcement violations that have been issued on a property or on a property owner, which has empowered some really interesting things. So that combination of data has actually led to other people building tools on top of this. So there's this great website, for example, called Property Praxis.
So does that mean it's like open source?
So what it is, it's like our open data portal. Other people who know how to build websites can use the application programming interfaces or APIs to build their own tools that use our data as a service. And so this Property Praxis website does this really cool thing where it takes all of the parcel ownership information and it uses it to try to match that against state databases around LLC members to understand like speculation activity in the city of Detroit. Like what are the companies and LLCs that like own a lot of property in Detroit.
Yeah.
Sort of just sharing that information without judgment.
And what are they doing? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But just sort of, hey, like just this property owner owns like 1,700 properties in Detroit. Like that's kind of interesting to understand like mm-hmm. who the people are that own that much property.
And what are their motives?
Exactly. And, yeah. So it's great because a big question we get about is property. And so we're able to sort of make that information available freely, being updated automatically. And people are really being able to answer questions about it.
Now, a lot of this is really new stuff for the city of Detroit, right? I mean, has it pretty much started under Mayor Duggan?
It has. So the Open Data Executive Order was signed in February of 2015. So we're coming up on the 2-year anniversary of that, actually. So this is a brand new initiative. This is uncharted territory, frankly, for city government in Detroit.
Mm-hmm. And again, that charter is something that you helped author. Right.
Yes, which is great because the engineer wrote some policy, so hope it works out.
Now, is that something that's like framed, you know, like the Magna Carta of, you know, Coleman A. Young?
So, no, it's not. I do have a copy of it with an original blue ink signature, mm-hmm. Which I'm quite proud of. But mm-hmm. No, I guess I should enshrine it somehow, but it is not.
Right. Our guest today is Garland Gilchrist II. He's the Director of Innovation and Emerging Technology for the City of Detroit. So we're talking all about data and the city. You have, as I mentioned before, a really interesting background, both in terms of public policy involvement with MoveOn.org and also the Barack Obama's 2008 presidential campaign, as well as you've also been an entrepreneur, right?
Yes.
I was reading that you launched a company that you eventually sold.
Yes.
I mean, talk about your journey to getting to this point where you're doing these. I'm just curious how you got to, you know.
Totally. All
to
right.
This point.
So here's how it starts. And it goes back to when I was 5, which I mean that in like sort of a totally non-cliche way. So I spent the first half of my childhood in the city of Detroit and the second half in the suburbs.
Okay.
So when we lived in Detroit on the east side, my grandma, who was a teacher at Munger Middle School on the west side, a social studies teacher, she basically woke up one day and decided her baby needed a computer.
Oh.
So my grandma bought me a computer when I was 5 years old. I was the first kid on the block to have a computer. I was getting a computer.
You told me before when you graduated, so this would be back in the 80s.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. This is like 87.
Okay.
And so she bought me this computer. And my parents made the really wise decision in hindsight to like actually let it be my computer. So they didn't like, yeah, grandma bought this computer, but it's really our computer to do work on. They like actually let it be my own. What that did for me, which I didn't even realize until I was an adult, was it gave me confidence that I could control technology. And that sort of set off a chain of events that I think really did alter the path of my life.
Okay.
When I was 14, my first job was building computers for a small company called Three Wonders of Computers, which was basically this guy who was a PC tech at General Motors who had a side business building computers in Southfield.
Okay.
And so I worked with him, and the first five computers I built with my own hands, I installed at Butzel Community Center in Detroit.
Okay.
I got a chance to teach a computing class alongside those five computers that I built. And I got to do things like I showed a little girl the internet for the first time, an 8-year-old girl.
Oh, wow.
I showed an elderly woman how to use the mouse playing solitaire. And I showed a middle-aged woman how to use Microsoft Word to write a resume so she could get a job.
Mm-hmm.
My first experience with technology was like opening up new possibilities for people.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of forgot that. And I went to college to be a computer engineer and computer scientist, and I worked at Microsoft. Microsoft's a nice company. It's great. Not exactly the most awe-inspiring work, doing like enterprise document management on a product called SharePoint. Fun from that perspective, but it wasn't really super inspiring.
I'll say
it like that. So
you were destined for bigger things.
Yeah. So when I was out in Seattle, I was working at Microsoft, and that was I guess not the most fulfilling way for me to spend my professional time. So I started a political blog.
Okay.
And that political blog was called The Super Spade, Black Belt at the Highest Level. Great title. And it was through the relationships that I built with that website, which became pretty popular because there weren't a lot of basically like fresh college graduate black men like talking about politics on the internet in 2009.
Okay.
In 2005. So this was kind of, I kind of rode a wave of like the increasing popularity of political blogging, especially like sort of black people doing that.
Yeah.
And basically through the relationships I built on that blog, my sort of growing lack of inspiration from from my day job and working on the Obama campaign and seeing like, you know what, the paid staff person, like, I could probably do that job better than him, led me to want to go work in that political advocacy space full time. So that's what led me to, right after we got married, my wife and I, we left Seattle, moved to DC. I started working in politics. I did that for 5 years. But I always wanted to come home.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really about working with mentors and friends and family to figure out what the right set of opportunities would be to bring my family home. And I was thankful to be able to do that in 2014.
Yeah. And how did you cultivate your interest in public policy and politics?
That's my parents' fault. So okay. My parents were very, very politically active. When I was a child, so I sort of, that was my ethos. I mean, the soundtrack to my childhood was like the OJs and C-SPAN. So like, I really had this mix of like hearing Washington Journal in the morning.
Yeah.
Something that like my parents told me the story of like when I was in the fifth grade was when Bill Clinton was running for president against George Bush and Ross Perot. And like, apparently we had a mock debate at my school. And I was Bill Clinton, and I made the George Bush kid cry. And so the teacher calls home, and she's like, you know, Garland like really knew what he was talking about. And they were like, yeah, because we watched this like all day, every day. So I'm not surprised that he did really well.
Yeah.
So this notion of like the importance of politics and like just how that matters to everyday life is something that was really instilled in me as a child. And my mother was active locally in the block club. She worked on Dennis Archer's transition team.
Mm-hmm.
So that was something that was always really important to me. And it was great after leaving Microsoft to really be able to make that my profession. I didn't even know that was possible. I thought you did politics as a hobby or as a volunteer. I didn't know you could get health insurance doing politics. And so it was cool to actually be able to do that.
Right. When you look at, the intersection of politics and data, computer science and everything,
mm-hmm.
What politicians or campaigns strike you as doing it right and doing, putting technology to use for them well? I mean, Barack Obama, to give one example, is mm-hmm. often that 2008 campaign was often considered pretty groundbreaking for its use of technology, right?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I think I like to think about it. Let me think about it in terms of sort of advocacy. So there are some advocacy groups that I think are really excellent at it. So there's a group called Color of Change that's out of New York. They are basically an organization that works on behalf of primarily black people and black political issues. They talk a lot about like voting rights and combating voter suppression, mm-hmm. do a lot with gun violence. They do it a lot with gun violence, voting rights, and sort of things of that nature. And they are an organization that was sort of the spirit of a group like MoveOn.org, in terms of like sort of being really online primarily, but also being able to connect that to being able to mobilize people in the street at the same time. They really need to use data and information to target their campaigns and also to figure out where they're going to go for member growth. And I think they're really smart about how they do that. That's one that I really would point to. And they do issue advocacy and also advocacy on behalf of certain candidates.
Mm-hmm.
I think on the political campaigning side, I mean, I think that, you know, generally speaking, I actually think that the Peters campaign did some interesting work.
Gary Peters, Senator
Gary
Peters.
Yeah, I think Senator Peters' campaign did some interesting work this last go around. The Democratic Party's infrastructure has a lot of open questions right now, but I do think they had a really good run as far as using information to target sort of some local races or some statewide races in some places over the last few years. So a lot of the campaigning in Colorado has really spoken to that, and Nevada too. So that's what I'd point to. I mean, I think though we are at a point after this last presidential election where we're beginning to. It's kind of like a pendulum swift. The pendulum kind of swung all the way toward data-driven campaigning only.
Okay.
And now it's swinging back toward data needs to inform a field program and like how you actually knock on – you still need to knock on people's doors and talk to them and have conversations with person to person. Mm-hmm. So I think we're going to reach some happy medium where the two of those come together well. And I'm excited about that because I really think that's what politics in this century need to be about.
Right. What do you make of for example, Governor Rick Snyder's, you know, he's had this push to, you know, the dashboard style of government and everything. What do you make of his technology game?
So I think that the dashboard stuff and certainly he has been supportive, at least rhetorically, on some of the open data and transparency type things. Mm-hmm. I think that he's had some trouble in some other areas, but I do think that has been you know, an earnest effort on his part. And I think really that's not surprising someone with his background. I mean, like he has a technology background.
Right,
he's comfortable with that kind of stuff. So I would have expected nothing less of someone who called themselves Governor Nerd.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's been a good thing. And really my hope is with any of these type of initiatives, even the one that I'm running in the city of Detroit, your hope with that stuff is that you actually can change the way the government functions such that if someone comes into office after you who may have different policy positions, but that they realize that that is a value of governing generally and that they will keep that commitment to transparency.
Mm-hmm.
So like, for example, in the city of New York, like Bloomberg started all this open data stuff. When de Blasio came in, like it wasn't an option for him to remove that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's what we need to do.
It was part of the infrastructure.
That's right. That's how the government works in New York now. So
yeah.
I think we need to shoot for that type of transfer of importance in our own administrations here in Detroit and in the state of Michigan.
Yeah. How far along would you say the city is in terms of, you know, being open access and you know, data transparent and everything? I mean, is there a long way to go still?
I mean, it's
a lot to do.
Yes, there's plenty to do. I mean, certainly we have, I mean, we by our count, we count about 38 sort of departments and agencies, and we have about 60% participation. I mean, so I guess, you know, I want that to get to 100%, obviously. I think we've picked off some of the ones that were least challenging first. So the ones that we're still working toward have some deeper infrastructure challenges we have to deal with as far as the technology capacity of the staff. But we're getting there. And I think that we have good momentum when we have really a great team that we built in city government. That's the thing I'm most excited about, to actually like have like super talented staff who've been willing to join this effort.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to recruit and retain them. So I think that we are moving in the right direction. I mean, yeah, we could be at this for, you know, still a few more years before we got to 100% coverage there.
Yeah.
But I certainly think we've made a significant amount of progress in a little less than 2 years.
What kind of exciting things are you working on nowadays, or what's, you know, a future project that you're pitching or something?
So I am obsessed with text messaging as a way to share information. So when I was working at an organization called the Center for Community Change, we built the largest Spanish language SMS advocacy list in the country. We had about 700,000 people who like would at the drop of a text message, like call Congress or like call the White House to complain about immigration reform policy. So it was really super exciting. So I actually want to create a new set of interfaces to open data. So right now, you know, the primary way you have to access that stuff is either in person or on a website.
Mm-hmm.
We have a technology access gap in our city where, you know, about a little less than half of the people don't have consistent access to broadband in the city.
Sure.
So, but a lot of, but more, but the majority of people in the city of Detroit have cell phones that are capable of sending SMS text messages. So I actually want to create an SMS interface to Open Data. I want someone to be able to text a question to the government and have the, government answer it. So that they can do that either via SMS, via Facebook Messenger, via, you know, Amazon Echo, like, but just sort of natural language interfaces to Open Data is something I'm super excited about. Because again, that's all about making it easier for people to ask questions and get answers. That's really what everything that I'm about is about, making it easier for people to access information, making it easier for people to participate in decision-making processes. And right. So this SMS piece is just one part of that.
That's very cool. So I have to ask, given your sort of dual interests here in technology, mm-hmm. public policy, openness, and everything. I guess that's three technically. But I mean, any designs on public office for you? Are you, you know, do you, is that part of your future in any way?
I think I certainly am open to that possibility. I would love to. What it's about for me is about how can I find the most ways to be useful. So the reason that I left Seattle moved to Washington, D.C. was because I felt like I could be more useful to more people in Washington, D.C. than I was in my role in Seattle. The reason that I left Washington, D.C. and came home because I felt it was most important to be useful in useful to people in Detroit, not people in Washington, D.C. And so I think the next thing that I do beyond city government is going to be in that same direction. How can I continue to use my skills, my voice, and to recruit people to join an effort to be more useful and apply their talents on behalf of more people so that more people can participate in processes, more people can get access to the polls and get access to information. That's what I want to be about. So I'm not going to rule that out in the future. And I'm excited about what the future brings, even if I don't know exactly what it is.
All right. Well, we look forward to keeping in touch and hope you do that with us.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much, man.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for today's episode of the Daily Detroit Happy Hour podcast. Our guest has been Garland Gilchrist II. And again, thanks, Garland, for joining us and talking with us.
Thanks for having me. I can't wait to come back.
Sounds really interesting, the work you're doing. Keep it up. So that'll do it for our episode today. If you would be so kind, please consider leaving us a review wherever you found this podcast. And also, don't forget to share us on your favorite social media channels. Until next time, I'm Sven Gustafson. Be good.
You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.